To KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with guest host Dave Mazza. Today we'll ask if it's time for new strategies in the Portland Police Accountability Movement.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor $15 Now, a community hearing on the City of Portland's fair wage policy. This hearing will happen Monday, October 20th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the SEIU Union Hall at 3536 Southeast 26th Avenue in Portland. Portland's fair wage policy was adopted by the city in 1995 and is currently $10.38 an hour plus benefits. The community hearing will have testimony from workers, and Portland City Commissioners will be present and will be invited to respond to the workers' testimony. Again, that's $15 Now, a community hearing on the City of Portland's fair wage policy. Monday, October 20th, 7 p.m. at the SEIU Union Hall, 3536 Southeast 26th Avenue in Portland. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Community College, where the Southeast Center at 82nd and Division is now a full-fledged campus, allowing students to earn an associate's degree in their own neighborhood. PCC celebrates on October 18th at noon with campus tours, local food vendors, and live Afro-Cuban music by Maleo de Cuba. pcc.edu/celebrate.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Volunteers of America, Oregon, committed to helping 17,000 vulnerable people of all ages in our community live better lives each year. You can learn how to help by visiting the website at voaor.org.
Good morning, good morning. This is Dave Mazza, and you're listening to Voices from the Edge. Joanne is taking her birthday off, and so she's not going to be here today, and we all wish her a happy birthday, I guess. And she'll be back next week, and the great lineup of topics, and starting to talk about the election that's coming up, and you know, she always likes to do the ballot measure reviews and what have you. So that'll be online in the next week or so. In the meantime, we're going to spend the morning here, I hope, talking about an issue that's important to you. I know there's a lot of issues out there. I've been gone a while from the mic, and, you know, look what all's going on. But I wanted to focus a bit on police, which is a topic, I don't know if I want to say near and dear to my heart, but one that I've certainly spent a fair amount of time on, and that many of us in the city have spent time on trying to address the problem. Earlier this month, Chief Reese announced he'd be retiring at the end of the year, and the mayor, Charlie Hales, promoted Larry O'Day, who's been an assistant chief, as the new chief of police. And in some quarters, this is being hailed as a sign that Mayor Hales is trying to move towards community policing. Day has been an advocate of getting people out of their officers out of their cars and interacting more with the community, although the areas where this has been happening more recently in the city have been, you know, somewhat limited. They're doing it on the Hawthorne District and areas and some of the other commercial areas. In terms of really grappling what community policing means, I think that's a whole nother thing. However, my point is that we find ourselves once again as this year comes to a close with a police bureau that, you know, even if you're giving him the benefit of the doubt, seems to be paying just lip service to some of the community demands for changes in how policing is done. We may certainly see them getting out of their cars to support local merchants along Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, but, you know, I'm not sure what the response is in some of the other parts of the communities where they've been far more challenged in how they want to deal with people. So, you know, it seems that we need to be looking at what sort of progress have we made in changing the Bureau. From my perspective, not a whole lot. You know, we're still struggling with an independent review system that seems, you know, fatally broken, although people of good intentions are continuing to work on that. You know, and then there's other aspects of this issue. It's hard to just say it's all one big homogenized thing. But at any point, it seems like as we're approaching the end of the year, it's a good time to sort of step back and say, you know, what's happening in terms of bringing a police accountability in Portland? What progress have we made? And should we be looking at different strategies? So that's what I'd like to spend the next, you know, 54 minutes or so with you talking about. And I hope that you will be the primary ones talking by giving us a call at 503-231-8187. Because I want to hear about, one, what you think about the status of policing in the city. Have we made any progress over the last couple of years? You know, we had the U.S. Department of Justice come in and mandate a variety of changes, policy changes, in how the police interact with the mentally ill. But how much is that has really happened? There's a lot of sense, I think, among many people that the city worked very hard at trying to resist making the substantive changes that needed to be made in order to truly meet the spirit of the Department of Justice order. So what do we do about that? We have been, you know, getting out in the streets, doing, you know, demonstrations time to time. We've been putting pressure on elected officials, and we still seem kind of stuck in place. So I'd like to think about, maybe we're just, you know, pursuing this the wrong way. I don't know. We need to think about that. I think one area that I've always considered a real tough spot in terms of addressing police accountability in Portland is the fact that we have this commissioner system, so that the elected official who is representing you is also a commissioner of a particular bureau. In this case, it's the mayor, which sets up, of course, a dynamic that, you know, whatever the mayor or whoever the commissioner is in charge of the bureau is doing, it's going to have political ramifications for them, very direct political ramifications, which is a formula, really, for doing absolutely nothing. Because it's better to do nothing and not upset the status quo than it is to risk doing something that might affect your political career. So, you know, there's that whole kind of glitch in the institution we have here in our city. Do we need to look at changing that? Do we need to look, you know, of course, the big picture would be, do we need to reform our commission system, or do we at least need to reform certain key services like public safety and democratize them further, taking them out of the hands of the city council and coming up with an elected body, a police commission, which includes representation from the community? I mean, those are avenues that we really haven't seriously looked at in this town, and maybe we need to. But before we talk about that more, I'm going to go to the phone lines because we've got a caller on the line, and I hope others will join us in this conversation about what the status is of police accountability in Portland. What do we do about it? Do we need to take a bold new course? And you can do that by giving us a call at 503-231-8187. And we got BJ on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. I forgot your name.
I'm Dave.
Dave, a great Mazda. You're named after the car.
Well, I wish I was, but I'm not, so I don't get any of that money.
Well, you don't need the money. Think about all the good work you're doing.
Okay.
You don't need the money. None of us need the money. And the ones who need the money are psychopathic. They're really gone. By the way, Joanne could do a really good picture if she goes down for a free breakfast for her birthday. And you know where that's at. Is that restaurant right near you gives a free breakfast. And I don't want to give commercials, but anyway.
Okay.
I go there on my birthday. I want to ask you, Mr. Monson, what is the best thing to do since I drive a Prius? I want to, what is the best, or a, I don't know, a Toyota. What is the best way for me to keep driving it and gradually let go of things, of money, and be more contributing to a society that will function better, that will enable the police to have a better rapport with the people, where I can walk along in the old days when I used to in Hollywood, walk along the street to my job at wherever I was at the radio's KRLA, and I could talk to them and say, hey, how are you doing today? And he could say the same to me, and we could have rapport. We could have a connection together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that mean, says to you, and I'm a little out of breath because I am 78 years old, and I've been through a lot of stuff.
You sound like you're rolling full speed to me.
Well, thank you. I have a high mentality, but I am my body's falling apart.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I'm barely able to get down there. I'm going to... Well, anyway.
Yeah, well, back to your question. Yeah. You know, I mean, and I, you know, earlier I was talking about the you know, getting the police out of their cars and interacting with the community.
That's
And that's a good thing. I don't get me wrong. I just think that, you know, we haven't really seen a serious commitment by the police bureau to do that. I mean, I think they've trotted out a few little, programs that would appeal to certain business sectors in the city, but in terms of doing the really tough community policing work in those communities where people are really alienated, where they feel like they can't do what you used to be able to do, which is just have a nice casual conversation with a police officer, I mean, I think most folks, particularly in some of those communities, are, you know, the last thing they want to have is any interaction with the police. So, you know, I just feel like, you know, we're jumping ahead of things if we're saying Chief O'Day has brought community policing and things are all going to get better. I think we need to have a much bigger, more community-driven conversation about what community policing would look like and raise the questions that you're raising in terms of what sort of community do we want to have and how do we spend our resources and how do we create environments in which citizens like you feel like they can, you know, get out there and be fully engaged.
That's right. The only thing that separates me from you and myself is Social Security.
Well, that's going to change here for me pretty soon, too. So.
Good. No, you're going to be about age. Okay, I like what you said. We need to develop a contact, a connection of speaking with each other and not just throw people behind bars and there they go forever.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, that's the whole thing. Is we need a police bureau that doesn't automatically look as everyone as suspects, that they need to be looking at people and understanding as people as part of the community. And to be fair, there are officers out there doing that. There are officers who make a serious effort to connect. But particularly in those neighborhoods that have historically had, you know, received really bad treatment from the police, we're not seeing that sort of effort being made to ensure that the police are trained, culturally sensitive, and really know, you know, what they're getting into. So, and interacting and their attitude. So, yeah, that's what we all need to work on. I think that's what we all need to be demanding as one of the big pieces of changing how public safety is done in our city.
Right on.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I think you're just going to keep on going and, you know, being involved.
It's, thank you for that. I need that kind of prayer. I need that sort of backing.
Okay.
So I'm helping my society of other people and we all can contribute. I want to go beyond money. We need to go beyond money. Look
yeah.
what the banks did to us.
Yeah, exactly.
They ruined me, you know.
Well, I agree. That's a whole other program, though, that we're going to talk.
It's partly connected to the police intervention because they're making big money maybe now and they're talking to somebody not making anything. But that's another issue. You're right, sir.
All right. Well, you have a good afternoon now.
Right on. Morning. All right.
Morning. I guess it is morning.
8
All right.
O'clock. I'm the first caller.
All right. Well, you take care now.
Right on, Dave.
All right. All right. Well, you're just tuning in. You're listening to Voices from the Edge. I'm Dave Maz. I'm sitting in for Joanne, who's taking a little birthday break. So she's off having a good time somewhere or recovering from a good time somewhere. I'm not sure which. But in the meantime, we are spending the morning talking about where we are in the police accountability movement. And do we need to be looking at some new strategies? Do we need to look at maybe a course change here on how we've been attempting to pursue policing that actually benefits the community and is not the model that we currently have in Portland? If you want to join us in that conversation, and I hope you do, it's 503-231-8187. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Ann on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. I'm glad you're addressing this topic. And happy birthday, Joanne. I know that I wanted to say that I think the last caller had some good points. I'm in my 60s, and I also experienced a time where, as a white person, I could address cops, you know, as if they were human beings. But starting about 20 years ago, it was became clear to me, listening to the stories of my students and then my own experiences, that the police don't regard themselves, for the most part, as beings to whom you should speak normally. They regard themselves as beings to whom you should kowtow and behave in a very submissive manner, or they get highly, you know, nerve-wracked over it. So I do kind of, you know, I relate to what he was trying to say. But then again, I'm now married to a person of color, and my experience of that has been very eye-opening. Again, you know, regarding the police. But my main point today that I want to make is that, you know, this is not a local problem. This is a nationwide problem. What we saw in Ferguson, what we see in every city and small town across the nation. I recently lived in a small town, and the police were just as abusive and just as cut off from the community as when I lived in the second largest city in the U.S. It's a nationwide problem of militarization of the police. That has to stop. I think there's a drive on to do that right now, and I think the Portland City Council should be pressured to get involved with that and stop the flow of military arms to the police. Secondly, I think that the war on terror needs to be completely, we need to stand down from that ridiculous concept. And we have to make the police realize that they are not being patriotic when they oppress the entire population. And actually, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have put this third, I should put it first. The police have to be trained, and there has to be zero tolerance for racism. That is one of the biggest problems. I mean, it's ridiculous. You can't live in this nation if you are not a white and also wealthy, as the previous caller mentioned. But mainly, it's a matter of racism. The idea that you can be shot down in with impunity is just, it's intolerable, and it's something that we should never lose sight of. Community policing, I've experienced. They put the officers in that who are most, their personality is such that they have no desire to oppress people in the first place. But at the same time, that doesn't affect the culture of the police as a whole. It's not going to stop shootings. The only thing that's going to stop shootings is indictments.
Right. Well, and I'm glad you raised that issue about changing the culture as a whole, because I think, you know, those areas where we see in Portland and elsewhere, I'm sure, where community policing is working, there's sort of a self-selection going on. Officers who are interested in that may gravitate towards that. But I think oftentimes, and I know for in Portland this is the case, they usually represent a very small minority of, you know, the perspective of the entire bureau, and must, you know, as evidenced by the interest of most officers to be involved in, you know, gang enforcement, the drug stuff, all of the, you know, the big guns, boom, boom, exciting sort of stuff that, you know, generally involves also a fair amount of violence. So, yeah, we need to be looking at how do we change that, and how do we change that culture? And, you know, I'm looking at the city council's track record, not so good. Because there is this sort of honing in on just little items. Well, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. There's never any, you know, I guess, admission on the council's part to say, you know, we have a bureau here that we have, you know, minimal control over, and we don't seem to have a clue about how to change that. So, yeah, I think that's, you know, obviously the big step here is what tools do we bring to this to change that culture and to create a form of policing where we're not terrorizing whole communities, or worse, not only terrorizing, but literally killing people in whole communities. So all your points were really great. Really, thank you for bringing those up.
Well, thank you, Dave. And, yeah, I think pressuring local politicians is a good place to start, because you can't start with the police.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and I agree with you, too, that we also need to keep in mind that this is part of a national problem, and there's lots of different threads coming together here. We need to be looking at getting our U.S. representatives to be applying pressure on these programs from the federal agencies that are suddenly dumping, you know, surplus military equipment onto police bureaus. And yeah, I know there's been, you know, the president has said something about this, but he's good at making speeches. The care, the follow-through isn't always so great. And we need to make sure we pick that up and integrate that into our community discussions here as well. So it's a big challenge. And like I say, we need to, I think, look at what tools are we using to try to move that forward. So thank you so much for calling in. You have a great day. And you're listening to Voices from the Edge. I'm Dave Mazza, filling in for Joanne. Joanne is taking a birthday break and celebrating her birthday. She'll be back next week. And I know she's gearing up for her ballot measure parade. She loves, she does a great service to the community of kind of going through and reviewing the key ballot measures. And we have several this time around. So look forward to that, especially since, you know, the voter's pamphlet has come and ballots will be coming in the not too distant future here. So there'll be things to be thinking about. So something to keep in mind. In the meantime, though, we're talking about police accountability. You know, where are we at? Where are we going? Should we be looking at a different way to get there? And I hope you'll join us in the conversation. We've had some great calls this morning, and I know folks out there have great ideas about this. So give us a call at 503-231-8187. You know, our last caller, Ann, was talking about the national effect of this, or aspect of it, and I think that's a really good point, is that we have a situation where bureaus like the Portland Police Bureau, you know, they get a lot of federal dollars and a lot of federal equipment. And, you know, unfortunately, that's not really things like community policing that's the big ticket items here. It's the militarized stuff. It's the, you know, the armored vehicles and the various weapons and what have you, which, needless to say, when you've got this stuff, you want to use it. Certainly changes the perspective. I mean, this was something that happened when Mark Kroger became chief of police. He was one of the big proponents of suddenly introducing a lot of militarization. And that's a trend that's continued since then. That's been like 14 years ago or so. It's a trend that continues, and one that, you know, we're not seeing a lot of resistance on the city council to. I think, again, you know, the council is really, really hesitant to really, you know, resist and stand up to these key policy issues. And we need to do something about that. We need to come up with a new way to, or some new strategies. And I think, you know, looking at restructuring who controls the police in this city is probably one of the things we need to be looking at. You know, lots of cities have police commissions, elected, some are appointed, some are elected. Many of them have community representatives on board. Perhaps that's what we need to be looking at, taking it out of the hands of the city commissioners and putting it in the hands of another body that we would have perhaps more control over. Just an idea for people to consider, something to put out there. Because right now, I think, you know, going and talking to our city commissioners, which we need to let them know, but the likelihood that they're actually going to stand up and do something brave seems, well, let's say remote at the very least. So what else can we do besides, you know, looking at maybe a police commission? You know, as I said before, we could look at changing how city does its business, change the commission form. That's a pretty big order. But we could certainly be starting to put more pressure on the city to channel funds out of these militarization campaigns, programs, and getting them into, you know, other programs that would train officers. We could certainly require officers to live in the community as opposed to moving out to the suburbs and being pretty disconnected from the people they're serving. You know, I mean, I think at least living within the city limits so you are a part of the broader Portland community should be a basic requirement, so that you are, in fact, you know, committed, engaged, involved. You have a bigger commitment to what's going on in your community. And hopefully that all gets reflected in who you are as a police officer and how you engage in policing. And that may not make any difference, but it can't hurt, like chicken soup. It can't hurt. So, well, we're going to get another caller we're going to go to. And again, if you want to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. This is Dave Mazza. I'm filling in for Joanne today, who's off enjoying her birthday. And we're talking about police accountability. So 503-231-8187. We have Helen on the line. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
My story is a little complicated, but what I want to say is I live out in the country. I live out in Sheridan. Mm. And one weekend, there was a whole bunch of shooting going on. And so I called 911. And first of all, they said it was the police doing it. And then so then later, they when I got, they called me back on Monday. They said it was the Portland police. And then I called the person who is, you know, the head of police. I can't remember what his name is, but, you know, mm-hmm. it's taking his place for the moment. It was. Well, he took my phone call, and I did talk to him a few more times, but he was, you know, like the lady who works for the sheriff in McMinnville said, they forget that they work for the public.
Yeah.
Because he was just cold, rude, I told you this, or I told you that. Now, what else do you want? It's like, holy cow, it's like, and I don't really know what the truth is, but there is a company in Las Vegas, a private company that goes and people pay more than $1,000. And it's a police force, it's military, it's prison people, maybe not the prison people. And they can go there and do all the shooting or SWAT team stuff. SWAT team
right,
stuff.
Right.
And so even I went to the house out in Sheridan and they said they had a permit. Well, supposedly, if you're just shooting, you don't need a permit. And even though I told the lady at the sheriff's office in McMinnville, hey, what is this kind of permit? She says, I'll get on it. But she doesn't really realize I'm not going to forget about this. And she's just going to let it go. And it's a battle that is so hard to fight, to do anything about. Because they're like, you know, it's like war. It's like the military. It's like mm-hmm. even when I talk to the people in Las Vegas, they'd say, I don't have to tell you anything. And even the police people, they don't have to tell me anything. And I just think it's getting to be a bit scary.
Well, I agree with you. And I agree that the gap between, you know, the population and the police just seems to be growing more yep. and more and more. And as evidenced by, you know, the way in which they're interacting with people.
Yeah.
And, you know, and from that flows all sorts of other decisions, I guess, yep. because if they don't respect us, well, do they really have to, you know, be concerned about how they handle us or mm-hmm. what have
it's
you?
It's not that they don't think they have to respect us. It's like they don't have to tell us anything
yeah.
because they just, they've got the guns and they've got the power. And some of them, I'm sure, are not that educated. But you know what? It's just like they're lucky people because they do have the power. It's too bad that we don't have the power.
Right. Well, you know, it's I agree. You know, I mean, you're right. There's that's a big issue. And, you know, how do we address it? What do we do? You know, and I think, you know, the usual solution in Portland is the chief will make some sort of announcement that there's a new program or there's a new commitment, and then 3 weeks later, everybody's forgotten about it. And, you know, they're certainly not getting prodded very much by the city council. So,
Well, the other thing is, I don't really know, like the lady in McMinnville who works for the sheriff, she said, well, we're transparent out here. Now, they're not transparent in Portland, and I say, and I said to the guy who's the head of police, I said, well, I hear you're not transparent. Oh, yes, we are. We've gone through so much. And then toward the end, you know, after I, you know, called him another time to see, you know, really, was he telling the truth? And he said, I told you I was telling the truth. And I just decided that they're not telling the truth. They're telling a line, or they're telling something. And again, you know, for having this company in Las Vegas, it's just like having war in Iraq, and then how they have private companies take care of it. And if they're doing this, it's going to get stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, having these private people get involved with the police so they can shoot. And when I talked to somebody about, you know, like supposedly in the country out in Sheridan, you know, like 300 or 400 acres away from me. It's like in my backyard. I can still hear it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. And they had the year before gone to Estacada over in that area for shooting. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, the fire that was over in Estacada area,
mm-hmm.
and they said there was a place for people shooting.
Yeah.
That could have started the fire. Do you know what happened with that? It was silenced. It was, nobody knows for sure how that fire got started. And believe me, I bet it was from people shooting. And it's not, you can't use a chainsaw when it's super hot in the summer, but you can shoot. So they closed that down to say that the shooting was the cause of the fire.
Right. Yeah, I agree that the police too are really big on not only the secrecy, but having the sense that they need to be spending time on all sorts of things like these sorts of, you know, shooting events and what have you. I mean, there are facilities for them, indoor facilities.
Yeah.
I mean, in Portland, there's indoor facilities for them to do their
yep.
firearm training. They don't need to be outside. We had
right.
the problem.
Well, you know, so far away, and even you could hear it into the town. And my dog, my little dog, has tails down the whole weekend. And it, and you know where this place was that they did this. Well, like this one guy who lived right next door, he photographed the whole thing of all these cars and all these people.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly the idea is they were coming from all these different places. But then the lady in McMinnville said, well, there's lots of cars with different license because they've got to figure out a way to catch people.
Well, Helen, we're going to have to add transparency to the list of things that we need to deal with here. I really appreciate you taking
yep.
that up. We're going to have to move on. But
yep.
thank you for sharing that story, and I hope you're able to get some resolution out there and share it.
Never.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Take care now. Well, we're going to go back to the phone lines here in just a moment. But before we do, I want to remind you why you should be keeping that dial at 90.7 FM or KBOO.FM if you like to listen to the live stream. Because coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, News You're Not Supposed to Know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fagering speaks with writer and professor Andro Basevich on Obama's strategy against the so-called Islamic State. Yeah, that's an interesting strategy he's got. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoint continues, a multi-part tribute to the late Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Gary Webb, with speeches from the archives by Webb and fellow journalists Robert Perry and Martha Honey. And at 11, on Between the Covers, we speak with journalist and author Alex Christie about her new book, Gutenberg's Apprentice, a novel based on the story of Gutenberg and his apprentice and the production of the Gutenberg Bible, and all the trouble that would cause. So, thanks, KBOO members, for your support in our recent membership drive. We really appreciate your support. Yeah, it was really great. Folks were wonderful during the drive, so big thank you. Well, I'm Dave Mazza. You're listening to Voices from the Edge. Filling in for Joanne today. She's celebrating her birthday. We're talking about police accountability, where we're at, where we need to go. Do we need new tools to try to get a handle on this situation? Give us a call at 503-231-8187 and join us. We have Lynn on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
How are
Good
you?
Good to hear you back again.
Oh, thanks. Good to be back.
I'm getting really tired of this subject. I mean, over the years.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
And the same thing keeps happening. And I think it should be looked at another way. It's not a matter of accountability. And I got to disagree with the last caller where she talked about the cops being lucky because they have the power. Luck has nothing to do with it. People have political power because they organize toward it and
mm-hmm.
they work their butts off. That's how people have power. And to that end, and you're saying, well, maybe we should try something else. I wonder what it could be. How about, I suggested this before.
How about what?
Set up a special district. You know, like Metro or TriMet, there are places that have public safety special districts.
Mm-hmm.
And take over, and that would be a new entity. They wouldn't have the same financial obligations like to the cop to the bloated pension plan that the cops have.
Right.
That would save money. But even if it didn't work, do you remember when the whole thing about the water district was before the voters?
Right. Right.
Okay.
Okay, it didn't pass, but all of a sudden, and they, at least from what you hear, I don't know as far as actual results, but at least they made some pretty darn sincere noises about the water deer all of a sudden getting religion. Now, I think it would have to be tried several times to really get attention, because the cops are even more entrenched than the Water Bureau. But, you know, it's got to be a matter of power. Because the way it is, your one critique of the commission system, I'm not sure about it, I got to think about. But the other thing is that they're all at-large elections, which means they're elected by the whole city.
Yeah, most another big issue.
The vast majority of whom, big surprise, are not people of color. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of them, I'm sorry, don't care.
Yeah.
But if you had a special district in areas that are impacted, or at least a strong drive toward it, maybe that would get someone's attention.
I think that's an interesting idea. So this special district would be headed up by an elected board of representing the community?
You could set it up. You could set up. Well, I'm not sure. How they're set up depends on the state constitution. I haven't looked at the details in Oregon.
Yeah, yeah.
There may be choices to exactly how it's set up, but I would presume that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but clearly we have the option out there to start coming up with new institutions or new structures that might better move us in the direction we need to move in on this stuff, as opposed to just repeating the same effort over and over again and kind of getting the same result of, you know, minuscule change, if any change at all. So,
well, you have to go for their money.
Yeah, well,
that's what it is. I come from that kind of a conservative background. I have a very close relative who was one kind of cop and retired and became another kind of cop. And from my perspective, they understand power.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. Well, appreciate your input. I think that's a good idea. Let's get working on that.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care now. All right. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza. This is Voices from the Edge. I'm filling in for Joanne today. She'll be back next week. We're talking about police accountability, where we are, and more importantly, where do we need to go? Because, boy, it just keeps feeling like deja vu here. So give us a call at 503-231-8187 if you want to join us in the conversation. We've got Richard on the line. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Dave. See, I want to talk about the underlying problem in a minute, but part of the overall problem is that we keep on doing the same things, and mm-hmm. you pointed that out. We tend to keep on doing patchwork, little bandages that get forgotten in a couple weeks. The scab falls off and everything's forgotten. But can you inform us of the names and the office of the folks who actually do the hiring and the hiring of police officers? Those people seem to have the most fundamental grasp on who it is that acts as police officers. They know who they're hiring, and they have control over how we're going to be treated by those individuals.
Right.
I just think it's important for us to know them and lobby them.
Well, I mean, it can't hurt, that's for sure. I don't have the names at my fingertips, but I do know that, you know, that like any...
What's their office?
Pardon?
What is their office?
How do
you get in touch with them?
Well, you can call the police bureau and ask to talk to their personnel department, which is the folks who would be actually crafting job descriptions and coming up with that. And then the city's own, you know, personnel department would also be the ones who are involved in the hiring. So,
this is the problem that I wanted to bring to the fore.
Uh-huh.
Nobody knows who these people are. They operate in our midst. They affect our daily lives, and nobody even talks about their names. Nobody can conceive of these people mm-hmm. exerting this profound influence in our life. And this is fundamentally the problem. We don't care. We don't inquire. We don't know. I mean, that's my point for the morning.
Okay, well, thank you for your input. It's a good point you raised, and you take care. Well, We're talking about a lot of different ideas here this morning about how to get the police accountability issue moving forward, whether it's trying to have some influence on the people who are actually doing the hiring and developing the job descriptions and the criteria of what it means to be, you know, what they're looking for in a police officer, to creating new structures, to continuing a lot of the good work that's being done. And I want to, you know, we were talking about in the last caller, talking about, you know, well, we're just applying Band-Aids. And triage is important. There are critical issues that need to be addressed immediately. But if we don't get them into a broader context, if we don't put them as part of a larger, you know, plan of moving forward, we kind of stay stuck in the triage. We never get out of the ER and up to surgery where we need to do the important work. So hoping folks have some ideas along that line, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And we're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Sean on the line. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. I was just calling because I work in an industry, just a serving industry. But for our accountability, one of the tools that the Sheriff's Department uses and the Oregon Liquor Commission Control uses is like a secret shopper program. So, I mean, I'm able to go on about my job constantly, but I'm always have the possibility of being accountable for every action and every table I serve alcohol to. I just felt that maybe if there was some sort of secret shopper or a program where, you know, there was a lawyer or somebody else that knows the law and they're constantly out there, you know, a police officer may or may not feel more accountable for any, you know, interaction with the public, because at any point it could be one of these, say, secret shoppers, mm-hmm. where, you know, they imply a program somewhat like that, to where you're constantly feeling accountability for every action you're taking.
Wow, that's an interesting idea. We do have like organizations outside the system like Cop Watch who are visibly observing the police, and that has an impact. But I hadn't thought about having a secret shopper. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously you can't have someone going out and speeding, you know, until they get pulled over. But,
right.
you know, if they felt that there was, you know, an educated person or somebody that is guaranteed to, you know, that they would have to be responsible for at that moment, you know, I think that would maybe, you know, help restrain them a little bit in the, you know,
mm-hmm.
ability to feel that they, you know, they're in total control of the situation and that they would have to, you know, put a little more balance on that.
Interesting.
That was my only call, is that, you know, it's a tactic that they use. I think that it would work well if it was applied towards them also.
Well, thanks for putting that out there. I think it's, you know, something worth looking into. So you have a good day now.
All right. Thank you for taking my call.
Okie doke. Well, again, we're talking about police accountability. I'm Dave Mazza, filling in for Joanne today. Give us a call at 503-231-8187 if you want. We're talking about where we're at, but more importantly, we're talking about how do we get out of this mess, because we keep doing the same thing and we end up with the same police bureau. So, got any ideas? Give us a call. And we've got Vernon on the line right now. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Hey,
I've got one more piece of the solution. I think it's going to take a whole lot of different efforts and a whole lot of different things. But I've been thinking about the police academy in Salem.
Uh-huh.
What could we do to get Marshall Rosenberg's curriculum into that academy?
Wow.
To teach police how to resolve conflicts without violence, without threat?
Yeah, yeah.
To actually empower them to use the most effective methods of preventing violence?
Well, I think that's a good question. How do we do that? I mean, clearly we need to, how do we get the political pressure that would have that make that happen?
Exactly. I suspect it's going to have to be legislative, although the governor probably has the authority to do it.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I was thinking about that. I mean, I'm thinking probably, you know, one of the levers that we could be using is trying to build some legislative pressure that would be, you know, tied to the continued funding of that. And the police academy has traditionally been, you know, dominated by by Portland in terms of kind of influencing its curriculum and all that. So
exactly.
How do
and,
we?
You know, we feel the influence of that. I live down in Corvallis, and frankly, our police department is pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Certainly compared to the ones up north, we're in really good shape. Our police do not routinely beat people.
Yeah.
But they're still part of a culture that believes that violence is the ultimate solution.
Yeah, right. And that you have to suppress. Right.
It is simply not true. The fact is, nonviolent solutions are much more powerful.
Right, but yeah, and I agree with you. And because police are trained that, you know, from the moment you stop your vehicle, you need to dominate that person that you're pulling over, that suspect. And there has to be
exactly.
A, that they're a suspect, and B, they have to be dominated. And from that, all this other stuff flows. So, well, I think again, that's a great idea. We need to, look at that again. And I agree with you that there are many pieces to this. There's no magic bullet. There is. You know, having to look at how do we affect, like you say, the police academy where people are trained and all these other pieces that folks have been calling in about. So those are the things we need to take stock of so that we're not kind of just, you know, digging away in that same hole and it's not paying off. So thank you for your call and for your idea.
Thank you, Dave. In the long run, nice guys win.
All right.
See you later.
Okay. Well, as always, our engineer Steve here, source of all knowledge, he has handed me a note saying the only phone numbers on the Portland Police website are 503-823-0000 or 503-823-3333. All other contact info are email addresses. So that talks a little bit about how do you get into the system to talk to somebody there. And someone has called in during our earlier conversation asking for the return of the officer-friendly program, which I'm all for friendly officers. I'm not sure how successful that program was, but it can't hurt. So let's go back to the phone lines. We have Rose on the line. Good morning, Rose.
Good morning. I was downtown a couple of weekends ago when they had that, I think, the Hemp Fest or something going
uh-huh.
on.
Yeah.
And I was going to meet some friends at a restaurant for brunch, but lots of streets were closed because they had the festival going on. I was driving very slowly looking, you know, okay, which street's open, which one will get me where I need to go. And a policeman pulled up on my right side and motioned for me to roll down my passenger window, and I did. And he just started screaming at me. His face was all contorted, and I was looking at him like, oh, my God, what is this? And he's saying, you ran that red light, you know, and I didn't run the red light because I was going slowly and, watching, and I thought, oh, my God, I've seen all these people on Facebook that are getting tased, and, I mean, he was just screaming at me, and I said, whoa, if I ran the red light, I certainly didn't realize it, and I'm sorry, and I thought he was going to had me get out of the car, and I was just, I've got to say, I was absolutely terrified from watching him tase, you know, old ladies and everybody lately, but, I mean, he didn't say, you know, there was nothing polite about it. He was screaming from the very first word.
Yeah.
And his face was twisted up, and it was very frightening to me. I've had a lot of encounters with police where, you know, sometimes I've called them and, just asking directions or something like that. They've usually been pretty nice and pretty helpful, but this guy was just off the charts.
Well, you know, and the police are always saying, well, you know, civilians don't understand, you know, what a stressful situation police are operating in, and I do understand that, and if they're in a stressful situation, I don't want a guy who's yelling and screaming and out of control. I want people who are in stressful situations who are handling the situation. And I think lots of folks have had the experience you've had. I have had that experience. I encountered some cops in Laurelhurst a few years ago where I think they were chasing somebody into the park, but they had their car kind of blocking the street. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to go around or back off. I started to go around, and suddenly this cop is in my face screaming at me. You know, all he had to say was, you just need to turn around. We're in the middle of something here, and it would have been fine. But again, it was sort of that we need to dominate, we need to be dominant sort of approach. So,
well, And there wasn't another car on that block, I think because of the festival, you know, kind of rearranging traffic there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was driving well under the speed limit and watching and looking, trying to figure out, can I turn here or can I turn there? Oh, that one's blocked. And I know I didn't run that light. But, I mean, it was just, it terrified me. And I just thought, man, there's nobody around, and if he makes me get out of the car, I don't know what. I mean, I thought, am I going to not get out of the car?
Well,
and,
you, even if you had,
risk him breaking the window and
right. Even if you had run the light, his response was the wrong one. You know, running a red light doesn't warrant going into a rage towards the person. So, well, look, I'm going to have to move on because we've got some more callers. But thank you for calling and sharing that. And it's an experience, like I say, unfortunately, too many of us have had.
Terrified me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you. Take care now. Well, you're listening to Voices from the Edge. I'm Dave Mazza, filling in for Joanne, who's on her birthday break. And she'll be back next week and with a whole bunch of good stuff to talk about, including the ballot measures, since we have an election coming up. And we expect you all to be very, you know, on top of that. So in the meantime, I'm here this morning talking about police accountability, not so much where we're at, because we know where we're at, but where do we go and what new tools do we bring to this struggle in order to make some headway? 503-231-8187 is the number. So we're going to go back to the phone lines where we have Gabriella on the line. Good morning, Gabriella.
Good morning. I came from a dictatorship country, to America. And my country was democracy before. And I end up like an activist. And, of course, I end up in America and I end like a refugee. But it was too late to do something. And I listen this, and it's reminding my country when it's from democracy started slipping into a dictatorship. And that's why it's one when we don't understand when it's happening. Happening when we start not to be for each other, when we don't have a community anymore, when they separate us. I tell you an example. Like, I go to a store one day, and I see on a corner police, like four of them, big, butchy guys, surrounded one colored man, older man, and they very aggressively, they pushed him, they talked to him very aggressively, and I just go, and I see everybody started avoiding them, and I stood straight to them, and I said, a colored gentleman, I told him, sir, you are okay? And a policeman started yelling, yes, he's okay. I said, sir, I know you have a hard job, but I ask this gentleman, not you.
Wow.
And you have to respect that, because I respect your work, but you have to respect us too. And then I laughed. I just laughed. And I was in a store. Somebody touched me. I looked back, and there was a gentleman who was surrounded with police. And he said, thank you very much, ma'am. Thank you very much. After that, when you left, they was much gentler with me.
Wow. So, yeah, witnessing these things, being witnesses to it has, an incredible effect, even though it's a pretty terrifying thing to do what you did of, you know, standing up to an officer, a group of officers who are in the midst of, you know, obviously.
I know that it's not just that if we do it, they get used to it, you know, it's just the culture.
Yeah.
Culture when we start, because we are guilty too, when we start be violent with police and screaming on them and everything. We have to show a police, you are one of us. And we won't be respected too, but we won't respect you too. And
yeah,
that's a big message. And how we can do it, because I'm an activist, is educate people. You know, make a meeting and explain them. Like, violent always bring a more violent.
Mm-hmm.
And just be there. Not like people, then we make a big demonstration. Sometimes don't help. Would help citizen by citizen when come and decently talk to them. Like, hey, this is my human being. It can happen to me too, and I have to speak up. That's how I see it.
Right.
And I think that's when you still have democracy, but when you end up with a dictatorship, then this don't help anymore.
Right.
You know, that's, we have to make a culture of a politeness and show everybody I respect your work, but you have to respect me. That's why in Norway, police don't have even guns. They don't allow them to have guns.
Right.
Because guns is not allowed in that country. And they survive in that. And they have much less crime than we have.
Right. I'm all in favor of, you know, reducing the firepower of our police bureau. It's way out of control. So, well, Gabriella, thank you for sharing that, you know, and thank you for your work as an activist on this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, wow, we've almost gone through the hour, and I'm Dave Mazza. You're listening to Voices from the Edge. Joanne's going to be back next week. We've been spending the afternoon, or the morning. I don't know why. I'm just like kind of insistent this is the afternoon, but we're spending the morning talking about police accountability. And, you know, we spend a certain amount of time talking about current problems with the police. There's no shortage of conversation on that point. But really, I wanted to, and I think many of the callers, all the callers kind of helped in this, of us to take stock. We're getting towards the end of the year. Now's the time to take stock and look at what's working, what's not working, what do we need to try new? And as more than one caller pointed out, there's no one magic solution here. We're going to need to be approaching this from a variety of ways if we're going to change the culture in the Portland Police Bureau. And police bureaus throughout the state, for that matter. I mean, this is not a Portland issue only. For all you listeners out there outside the Portland city limits, you know, this affects you too, because for one, Portland being the largest police bureau in the metropolitan area, it has a lot of influence on what happens in policing. And, you know, if we change that, there'll be a ripple effect. But how do we change that? And as I said, there's going to be a lot of things. One of the things we didn't get a chance to talk about here, and I want to mention before we wrap up, is we really need to get a handle on the management system in the police bureau. You know, culture isn't going to change if the managers aren't truly on board and are managers. And that means they're doing things like regular evaluations and checking in with their people and ensuring proper training and so on and so forth. All the things that we would expect from managers in the non-police world, none of that's happening in the structure for running a massive organization like the police bureau, and it's still basically being run like, you know, this is 1910 and the cops are still wearing those funny Keystone Cop hats. We need to change that. We need to really shake up the management of the bureau. That's one important piece. And that's, again, a difficult one because we're talking about that's going to happen through the city council. And so far, you know, getting the city council even to face down the police chief, much less taking on the whole structure of the management, which, by the way, has its own association with political clout. Yeah, they're political. As Engineer Steve was pointing out, their association's much worse even than the police association. In terms of where they are on this stuff. So that's another piece that needs to be out there. And again, the more I look at this, the more I'm thinking we need somehow to pull that out of the hands of the city council and get it into some sort of more democratic structure, whether that's a police commission, a special district, like one of our callers suggested. But we need to do something, because just going back to Mayor Hales, going back to the other commissioners, and, you know, with our arguments and our reasons and our rationales, aren't getting us there. You know, we're getting cosmetic changes, and for every cosmetic change, we see the same old problems not only continue but worsen in many ways. So I think it's just time, folks. I think it's time for us to really get serious and really look at how do we broaden this out, and how do we broaden it out to reach more Portlanders who, you know, as one caller pointed out, you know, she came from a dictatorship where, you know, the police separated people. And that's kind of what we have here. We have a large block of Portlanders. You know, I'm sure that they are, you know, think it's a bad thing that the cops may have shot this person, but feeling like they should be engaged and involved and it's their struggle too, that hasn't happened yet. So there's a lot of stuff to be working on and to keep working on. And people like Joanne and many other folks out there that I have the greatest respect for are doing a wonderful job. We just need more people doing more, which is the case in activism in general anyway. But we need to be out there. So That's the call to action for the day. I'm Dave Mazza. You're listening to Voices from the Edge. It's been great to be back. Joanne's back next week. Stay tuned to KBOO. We've got Teresa Mitchell and Press Watch coming up, and you have a good day. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And good morning. You are listening to the Mighty Boo, KBOO Portland, just a minute before 9 o'clock. Actually, just a couple seconds before 9. Coming up in a half hour at 9:30, join us for Fight the Empire. Today, host Per Fogering speaks with writer and professor Andrew Bacevich on Obama's strategy against the so-called Islamic State. At 10 o'clock, it'll be Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints. Today, continuing a multi-part tribute to the late Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Gary Webb with speeches from the archives by Webb and fellow journalists Robert Perry and Martha Honey. At 11 on Between the Covers, we speak with journalist and author Alex Christie about her new book, Gutenberg's Apprentice, a novel based on the story of Gutenberg and his apprentice and the production of the Gutenberg Bible. That is all coming up this morning after we hear from Teresa Mitchell, hosting Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. That's next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Restoring Volcano Country, a fundraising event for the Gifford Pinchot Task Force on Thursday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. The event includes live music, local artists, a live and silent auction, and more, and takes place at Holocene. The Gifford Pinchot Task Force mission is to protect and sustain the Gifford Pinchot National Forest and neighboring communities through conservation, science, and advocacy. Again, that's Restoring Volcano Country, a fundraising event for the Gifford Pinchot Task Force on Thursday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information.